Radio Prague News.
The Institute of State and Law says that no expert opinion was needed for the purchase of the CASA military aircraft in 2010. Prime Minister Petr Nečas has thanked Croatian rescue services for their professional response to a tragic crash of a Czech bus on Saturday. And the European Commission may ask for a court injunction against felling trees in the Šumava National Forest. The Institute of State and Law says that no expert opinion was needed for the purchase of the CASA military aircraft in 2010. In a statement prepared for the Finance Ministry, the Institute of the Academy of Sciences writes that the Spanish transport planes qualified as, quote, special technology that did not at the time require an expert price analysis or a public tender. The police have asked Parliament to give up former Defense Minister Vlasta Parkanova for prosecution because she did not have an expert price analysis conducted prior to the 3.5 billion crown purchase. The opposition Social Democrats and police have condemned Finance Minister Miroslav Kalousek for saying that the charges against Vlasta Parkanova were an attack on democracy. Police President Petr Lessi said he was very alarmed by the comment and suggested that Kalousek turn to the General Inspectorate with his concerns. The Social Democratic Party also called on the government to quickly comment on Mr. Kalousek's words or else be suspected of sympathizing with them. Speaking on a Czech television program on Sunday, the finance minister and deputy chairman of the Topo 9 party said that by accusing Parkanova of corruption, the police were attacking the state's decision-making processes and the democratic system itself. Prime Minister Petr Nečas thanked Croatian rescue services for their professionalism in responding to the tragic crash of a Czech bus on Saturday. Mr. Nečas called his Croatian counterpart Zoran Milanovic on Monday to express his gratitude to all involved. Most of the injured passengers have already been released from hospital and many have returned to the Czech Republic on a special government plane. Six people remain in hospital in Croatia, two of them 13-year-old twins in serious but improving condition. The bus carrying 51 people reportedly struck a pole on Saturday morning before ramming into the median and flipping over, killing eight people, including the driver. It is believed that the driver fell asleep at the wheel. The EC may ask for a preliminary court injunction to ban the cutting of bark beetle-infested trees in the Šumava National Park. A spokesman for the EU Environment Commissioner, Janez Potočnik, told the Czech press agency on Monday that the EC had asked the Czech Republic to stop felling spruces in the park and addressed a letter with reservations and questions to Prague in mid-June, but has yet to receive a response. Brussels, he said, is monitoring the situation and will take legal steps if necessary. Lumberjacks began felling trees again on Monday in one of the infested localities. Now turning briefly to the weather, conditions should be mostly cloudy with scattered showers and highs of 20 to 22 degrees Celsius. My name's Christian Falvey. That's the end of the news.
Hello, you're listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio. I'm Jan Richter. Coming up in today's show, eight people died in an accident of a Czech tourist bus in Croatia. Then we have the latest Czech sports news. And later in one-on-one, we meet Jiří Vidím, who owns a hotel in Prague with a fascinating history. In the communist era, the building was home to the notorious STB secret police.
I saw Prince Charles being so interested in these cells, so a question crossed my mind. If Prince Charles is interested, others might be too.
All that and more coming up, so please stay with us. Four 51 Czech passengers aboard a bus chartered by the Brno travel agency Atlas Adria, a summer holiday turned into a nightmare on Saturday. En route to the popular Croatian holiday destination Makarska Riviera, the bus swerved off the road and overturned. Eight passengers were killed in the accident and more than 40 injured. Some have since returned to the Czech Republic on board of military aircraft. Sara Borůvka has the details.
It happened around 4 a.m. on Saturday. A charter bus with 51 Czech tourists on board swerved off the right lane of the A1 road near the Krpani tunnel, some 200 kilometers south of Zagreb. The vehicle first left the lane, then hit a crash barrier and a toll bridge before overturning. For eight passengers, the crash proved fatal. 43 were injured. Many of the accident survivors say they are traumatized. traumatized. One of them described what he remembers of the crash to Czech radio's Martin Dorazin.
Když jsem spal, ale ten zvuk mě prostě probudil a pak velký náraz a už se...
I was sleeping when the accident happened, but the noise of the impact woke me up and I could tell the bus was turning over. I heard glass shattering and crashed into the seat. It was a horrible sound. There was glass everywhere and I could hear the people around me shouting because they were stuck under their seats.
Teďka sténání lidí, kteří tam leželi pod něčím, pod sedačkama.
It is likely that the cause of the crash was that the driver with some 25 years of experience driving charter buses had a microsleep episode. He is among the 8 victims as well as a 7-year-old child. However, the victims' identities have not yet been officially confirmed by Czech authorities. A special military transport brought most of the injured passengers back to the Czech Republic on Sunday. Tomáš Dub, deputy of the foreign minister, explains the logistics of the transport.
Převezli jsme celkem do České republiky 24 pacientů.
We've brought 24 patients back to the Czech Republic. One of them is injured severely and is being treated at the Military University Hospital in Prague, along with 3 others who were not as severely injured. At the Brno Military Hospital, 16 patients who suffered light injuries and 4 patients who were badly hurt are being treated. The plane stopped in Zadar first and then in Zagreb, where we rescued a severely injured 60-year-old woman.
Seven Czech patients remain in Croatia, among them a pair of twin girls who are being treated at a hospital in Zagreb. Doctors say their condition has been improving. 5 passengers were hospitalized in the town of Gospic near the site of the accident. One of them was released from hospital on Monday. Another military transport may bring the Czech patients who have stayed behind for treatment in Croatia home later this week. Special helplines for the accident victims and their relatives have been opened by the Interior and Foreign Ministries. Both Prime Minister Petr Nečas and Foreign Minister Karel Schwarzenberg have expressed their condolences and vowed that the Czech authorities will do everything in their power to assist the relatives of the victims and those injured in the crash.
Sarah Bolovka reporting. Now, here is Jan Willinger with the roundup of the latest news from the world of Czech sports.
The Czech Republic's football squad may be out of Euro 2012, but that doesn't mean there hasn't been plenty of football news. Recently, fans, as well as former squad members, mark the 50th anniversary of Czechoslovakia's silver finish at the 1962 World Cup. The final, held in Santiago de Chile, pitted Czechoslovakia against Brazil, and Josef Masopust, now in his 80s, famously scored the opening goal.
Contraataque de los checos. Masopust la coge, dispara y esta vez sí marca el primer tanto para Checoslovaquia.
Brazil, however, responded, of course, and that match ended 3-1. 50 years on, 5 players from the original Czechoslovak squad, including Masopust, traveled to Brazil to mark the anniversary and attended a ceremony at the Czech consulate in Sao Paulo. One of the original players, forward Josef Jelinek, recalled details of the Czechoslovak squad's campaign 50 years on.
When we departed for Chile, we only had 1 team manager, 1 doctor, and 18 players, but we had no masseuse, so we had to hire one in Chile. And when we reached the final, he was overjoyed, walking around and singing all the time. He was absolutely thrilled to be the sole Chilean to make it to the final.
Luis Felipe Scolari, former Portugal manager and now manager of Palmeiras, meanwhile expressed the hope that the current Czech team will qualify for the 2014 World Cup, which will take place in Brazil. The Czechs, who lost in the quarterfinals at the European Championship that is still underway, will begin qualifying for the World Cup in September. Their first match against Denmark will take place on September the 8th. Back to Euro 2012, even though the Czechs are out, there were shades of Antonín Panenka on Sunday evening in Italy's highly entertaining match against England, which came down to penalties. The tireless and supremely talented Andrea Pirlo coolly caught England goalkeeper Joe Hart off guard on Italy's third penalty when he chipped the ball into the centre of the goal as Hart dove right. The cheeky penalty was highly reminiscent of Antonín Panenka's famous penalty that secured Czechoslovakia's win over West Germany at the European Championships in 1976. As many commentators remarked, it takes a very cool customer to kick it like Panenka. Francesco Totti was one who used it successfully against the Netherlands 12 years ago at Euro 2000. Czech League champions Liberec will face Kazakhstan's Shakhtar Karagandy in the second qualifying round of football's Champions League. The draw was decided on Monday in Neon, Switzerland, shortly after 12 p.m. The first leg of the matchup will take place on either July 18th or 19th, with the second leg taking place a week after that. Liberec goalkeeper David Bichy commented that the team was of the Russian school in terms of style and estimated that the team could expect hot conditions in Kazakhstan. On the downside for fans, they will not be able to see Theo Gebrselassie, one of the Czech defenders who performed admirably at Euro 2012 following his signing of a four-year contract with Germany's Werder Bremen. Turning to tennis now, the most famous Grand Slam competition, Wimbledon, has begun, and many Czechs, of course, will be looking towards number 7, Tomáš Berdych, recently described by at least one commentator as a dark horse for the men's title. Naturally, though, most tennis fans will be rooting for women's player and world number 4, Petra Kvitová, to defend. She won the championship, her first Grand Slam title, last year against Maria Sharapova. Her opening match is against Agul Amanmuradova of Uzbekistan, while Berdych will face Ernests Gulbis of Latvia.
Thank you, Jan Wellinger, for that. You're listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio. Coming up next, when communism ended in Czechoslovakia, there were only a small number of hotels in Prague. 22 years later, following a gigantic boom in the city's tourism industry, there are well over 600. One of the most interesting of them is owned by Jiří Vidím, and he is Jan Willoughby's guest in this week's edition of One on One.
Jiří Vidím, a former teacher, entered the hotel business almost at the very moment that communism fell in Czechoslovakia and seized the opportunities that freedom brought. For two decades now, he's been running Unitas House, a hotel in downtown Prague with a fascinating history. The complex it's part of was originally owned by an order of nuns, but for several decades it was occupied by the notorious communist-era secret police, the STB. Among those they held and interrogated there was the dissident and future Czech president, Václav Havel. When we met, Jiří Vidím discussed Mr. Havel's connection with his hotel. But first I asked him how he had initially got into the hotel industry.
In 1988, I read in the newspaper, Rude Pravo, and Edward was in a Czechoslovak-Austrian joint venture company, building or rebuilding the Hotel Palace in Prague 1, looking for staff. Actually, their condition was the staff shouldn't have any experience, so-called experience, from the old way of managing the hotel. So they were looking for brand new people. And the hotel was open on the 28th of September, 1989. That day, there was a demonstration at the Wenceslas Square of Charter 77, and 100 meters from this demonstration, the new hotel was being opened. So the honorable guest arrived all wet because the police was spraying the demonstrators with heavy sprays, water cannons. It was a mark for me, something was going on, something big. And then it came, it was in November, and the hotel was open and the occupancy was 20%, 25%.
There must have been then, after the revolution, a huge influx of visitors.
Oh, there was, during the revolution even, there were, you know, broadcasters, BBC, CNN teams coming, and the only place they could go to was the Palace Hotel. It was two hotels, the Intercontinental and the Palace Hotel, who corresponded slightly to the standards they were used to. Naturally, then, in the first month after the change, Prague got very attractive, most people just, you know, discovered Prague as a new destination. Prague was at that time a shabby, at the other hand, very charming place, because people were looking for something like a history of Europe 30, 40, 50 years ago.
You were telling me earlier that you had a fateful meeting with a guest who was a well-known Irish-American businessman and philanthropist.
Yes, this was a, you know, everybody has a meeting of his life, and this was one of mine.
I should say his name was Chuck Feeney. He's a very well-known businessman.
His name is Chuck Feeney, Charles Francis Feeney. He lives in the United States, travels around the world, and his philanthropic activities are well-known in many countries of the world.
And he was also philanthropic to you.
Actually, yeah, he was. He was behind my education, business education. He invited me to Ireland, to Dublin for a trade management institute. I studied there the management of the business and the hotel business in particular. And then he proposed me to start a company with him because he was very, you know, keen to do something in the new republic. So we started a company called Hibernia. We started to import different products, and we opened before Christmas 1990 the first Western looking shop in Prague 1, close to Leicester Town Square. There was a hairdresser salon, and we found a guy who was an owner of a house which was very unique at that time. And this gentleman leased for us this hairdresser salon, so we converted in 10 days. We went to Germany to buy lights, and we opened this shop selling watches and all different small products. It was a huge success. People were buying everything. Then I decided to go back to the hotel industry because I didn't want to be a retailer.
Now you're running a few hotels, including the one we're in right now, which is on Prague's Bartolomiejska Street. If I understand it right, this place belongs to, or the building belongs or belonged to an order of nuns who got it back in restitution.
Exactly. That building, actually, that's a complex of buildings, five in total, was restituted by the Order of Grey Sisters, which is a Czech order, in 1990. The sisters arrived here. There used to be a police building. The sisters built this place in 19th century. At that time, that used to be a very mighty order, having almost 1,000 sisters working in hospitals. But then in 1950, they were just expelled from here, jailed in a special place in North Bohemia, and the state secret police came into this building, and they had their cells underneath and interrogation places.
When you first came here, there were still police working here. I mean, Bartolomiejska Street was notorious as the downtown headquarters of the police under communism.
The place we are now, that used to be still occupied by the police, so we took only the front part, the street part of the building. The rear was still in hands of the police, and they were slowly moving out. Took at least 1.5 years to get this building empty.
Now it's a hotel here, but it was previously a hostel, and there was one room that had been the cell where Václav Havel was frequently kept.
That's right. Actually, where exactly it was is unknown to me nor to many other people. Now it's the cell called P6, Václav Havel's cell, where there is a small plaquette saying Václav Havel was jailed here. The reason why we pointed out at this particular cell, Prince Charles, coming here in 1992, he had at this time a foundation in London called Prague Heritage Fund. He wanted to support three monuments of Prague, and one of them was the Church of St. Bartholomew's, which forms a part of this complex, which used to be a shooting training place for the police. And he came here with Václav Havel. They went down to the prison, and Prince Charles asked Mr. Václav Havel where exactly was he kept jailed. I think he was a little bit confused at that moment, so he just pointed out at this door. It could have been other doors, but the matter of fact is he used to be jailed here a couple of times, There was always called, as far as I heard, a prevention. Anytime a comrade's visit coming to Prague, like Brezhnev or other guys, these people like Václav Havel, supporters of Charter 77, got jailed from prevention reasons, as they called it.
I think I saw on British TV in the early 1990s a program which featured the supposed cell of Václav Havel here in your building. Was there a lot of interest from visitors in that room?
Yes. I have, you know, the clip out articles from many big newspapers, the Times and the German newspapers, French, Scandinavian, even Russian, at that time, telling this story of a guy who runs a pension in a place of former interrogation cells, which was only part of the truth because the pension was much bigger, occupying even the ground floor and the first floor of the building. I think we saved these cells because at the time I came here, it was 1992, these cells hadn't been in use for 3 years, and there was, you know, humid, rot. And I saw Prince Charles being so interested in these cells, so a question crossed my mind, if Prince Charles is interested, others might be too.
Can people still stay in the former cells downstairs here?
No. The building needed a total reconstruction, so we agreed with sisters to do so in 2007. The building was completely renovated, rebuilt in fact, and the cells, most of them were closed, but number 6, P6, remain as it was. Our intention is to open a small museum with all those newspaper articles written about this, you know, sensation at that time.
Did Mr. Havel ever come back here in subsequent years?
Yes, he came here twice. There was a Czech filmmaker shooting a film called Václav Havel Goes on Holiday. And there was always a story any time he said he would go on holiday, he got jailed here. So he came here, it was 2004. At that time, he was not sure what cell was the right one. Maybe he was jailed in a couple of these cells. He was absolutely sure that it was this place. And at that occasion, the P6 was occupied by guests, so he couldn't go in. So he was shot in an interview with him in another one.
Ian Willoughby was talking there to Prague hotel owner Jiří Vidím in that edition of One on One. We are now rounding up our regular weekday programme with our popular miniseries ABC of Czech, brought to you by Pavla Horáková.
And welcome to Radio Prague's ABC of Czech language program, in which this season we look at Czech vocabulary related to Czech food and cuisine. Today I'm joined by
Daniela Lazarová.
Summer is a time of seaside holidays for many Czechs, but those who stay at home can enjoy a taste of the sea in their kitchen. Fresh fish isn't very popular in Czech cuisine, perhaps with the exception of the Christmas carp, but there is a whole range of tinned, pickled and marinated sea fish products that have been popular here for centuries. In the old days, salted fish,
slanečky,
used to be imported in big barrels from the Baltic and Adriatic seas and sold in pubs as snacks. And pubs are where pickled fish are served to this day, as their salty and sour taste goes well with beer. One of the favourite ones are
matjesy,
chunks of matjes herring in a salt and vinegar marinade, originally a Dutch specialty. Then there's
zavináče,
roll mop herring, the name coming from the verb
zavinovat,
to roll up. Their meat is firmer and rolled up around a piece of onion, and there is more vinegar in the marinade. If the fillets aren't rolled, they are simply called
kyselé rybičky,
little sour fish. Very popular are smoked fish,
uzenáče,
from the word
uzený,
or smoked. Very often they are local freshwater fish and can be eaten as they are, or the meat can be mixed with fresh cheese to make a lovely tasting spread. A tinned version are
uzené šproty,
smoked sprats. They are smaller than uzenáče and come in a can swimming in oil. In the communist days, they used to be imported from the Soviet Union, and sometimes they were hard to get. Then there are
sardinki,
sardines. The word can be used in the same metaphorical sense as in English, to describe too many people crammed in a small space. One of the few sea fish products available here in the communist days was cod liver,
treščí játra,
usually served spread on a slice of bread. Cod liver is not eaten here as medicine. Children used to be force-fed cod liver oil, but the last time was sometime in the 1950s. Quite an old-fashioned fish product is
sardelová pasta,
anchovy paste. It is still popular with some people and you can regularly buy it in supermarkets. Gaining on popularity is tinned tuna fish,
tuňák,
in all its varieties. There are many more pickled fish products on the Czech market now, but those we have listed are probably the ones you can most often find on a Czech table. Till next,
dobrou chuť,
bon appétit.
That edition of ABC of Czech by Pavla Horáková was the final part of our English language program today. We, as always, love to hear from you, so if you have any comments or questions, do get in touch. It's easy. You can write us a letter to Vinohradská 12, 1299 Prague 2, or send an email to english@radio.cz. But for now, from myself, Jan Richter, and all of us here at Radio Prague, thank you very much for joining us, and goodbye.